Well, I sat on the rock. It's still out there. It's there today. And I just cried. I just let it all out, just like a broken child. And I couldn't understand what was happening. All I wanted to do was go to Lincoln. I wanted to feel the electricity going through my body. I wanted to feel what my siblings felt and what my friends, and I just wanted to feel it, even if it was just for one day. Just one day. But I didn't get to feel that. And so I cried that day, and I have cried many days since, just wishing that, you know, that would have come true for me. But it didn't all through the years. Somehow I just thought that maybe the eighth grade I might get a chance to go. Or maybe if I cut up in school, I might get kicked out of, you know, Champion Junior High, and then I get to go to Lincoln. But that didn't happen. The first day of school, when I went, the principal told me, he said, "You are here. You cannot go to Lincoln High School. Get it in your head. This is the school that you're going to go to," because I cried all day. And he told me, if I did anything towards a white student or a teacher, anything disrespectful, if I touched them physically or said anything to harm them mentally, then I would not be able to go to Chapel Hill City Schools at all. I would have to go to another county to go to school. And that is what he told me.
Can you tell that to everyone, or was it just you?
I don't know, because I was having a hard time.
So they sent you to the principal's office because you were
Well, I went straight there when I came in, because I didn't even want to go into school. Oh, no, no. I wanted nothing to do with it. Because I was being taken out of my, what I call, a safe, secure environment. And I was being put in an environment that I've been taught all of my life not to be prejudiced, but to avoid confrontations, just ignore these people, pretend they're not there. So here I am, seventh grader, and now I have to deal with these people every day when I didn't used to have to deal with them at all, just my parents. And the only time they dealt with them was when they went to work. When they got home afterward, they went right back in their safe, comfortable, secure environment. They did not have to deal with whatever was out there, you know, for another, 16 hours or so until it was time to go back to work. But I had to deal with it in the classroom in a different setting than what they had to deal with. They dealt with employment. I dealt with trying to get an education with people who did not want me there, did not care what I learned or not, and even the students themselves tried to prevent me from learning by the physical abuse and mental abuse.
How did they show physical and mental abuse?
By spitting on me, tripping me, or I had one year, I used to take my lunch because we were over the limit for free lunch. And so, you know, for my family, though we had 11 kids, I mean, you really had to be without in order to get, you know, free lunch and all. Well, anyway, that was in the black school. Now, when I got to this other school, Chaffee Junior High, I noticed some kids, white kids, who lived in Carver, and they were getting free lunch. And, you know, but I was not able to get it, even though I knew that they had a little bit more income coming in than my family. So that was a disparity between black students receiving free lunch and white students receiving free lunch. But anyway, I had my lunch in my desk. We had a little basket at the bottom of your chair, your desk. So I had it sitting there with the rest of my books. Unbeknownst to me, someone had tampered with my lunch. It was in a bag. When I got to the cafeteria, and we had a table that, you know, that's where majority of the blacks sit. We just had our own little table. And because, you know, you really didn't mingle out with the other students. Now, some did, maybe one or two blacks did that. They were black males, but they were sitting with other males, like white males. So anyway, when I got to the cafeteria and sat down and I took my sandwich out, and I was talking when paying attention, and I was getting ready to bite in my sandwich. And one of the guys sitting at the table said, "Wait a minute, there's some legs sticking out of that sandwich." Somebody had removed my bologna that I had in my sandwich, and they put in a dissected frog. Yeah. Well, you, after a while, you expected things like that to happen. You were not afraid anymore. It's almost like, you know, this is it. You're going to have to accept this. They don't want you here. You don't want to be here yourself. So whatever comes, you just have to deal with it on a daily basis, because you didn't know what was going to happen, and you couldn't be on your guard all the time.
Was it that way your whole first year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it went on. Not just first year. Stuff like that just went on probably until I got to high school, when Chapel Hill High School was built. See, when I finished at Guy B. Phillips, 7th, 8th, and 9th, well, 8th and 9th grade, I was at Guy B. Phillips. Chapel Hill Junior High, I was there at the 7th grade. They built Phillips, and then my class moved there. Okay, so after I finished the 9th grade, I went back to Chapel Hill High School on Franklin Street. You had the same basic kids and all, and you had more blacks in school, you know, but, you know, Lincoln was still open. So in the 11th grade, we went out to the new school. And so, what was it? I think it was 66.
67.
Well, they consolidated the schools, and they closed Lincoln. That is the only time that I noticed that some of the mental abuse, it stopped.
When you went to the new high school?
No, when they closed Lincoln and the schools were consolidated.
Yes. Was that when you started at Chapel Hill High School?
Right. Now, when I started at Chapel Hill High School, you just had mental stuff. You didn't have the physical stuff, you know, because I had been there so long.
The one on Seventh Street.
Right. Well, I had been with the white students, you know, from the 7th grade, and here we are in the 10th grade, and then we went to the 11th grade. So when we got to the 11th grade, a lot of the bickering and stuff like that is, you know, it kind of stopped. I mean, you still had some prejudice. You still had people may, you know, call you a nigger or a darky or something like that. But by that time, it was just passing words that bounced off you. You know, you looked at these people as being ignorant people. You know, after all this time, all these years, they're still at it. All right, now, but when Lincoln closed and the schools were consolidated, that stopped. And the reason that stopped is because for the first time since the 7th grade, whites had to reckon with the blacks coming to school. It was no longer just their school. It was everybody's school. They had to deal with the angry students coming out of Lincoln High School, especially the senior class.
Before you get into that, I wanted to ask you, you said that you were an angry person when you started 7th grade at Chapel Hill Junior High.
Yes.
How did you handle that anger? What did you do with it?
Well, my mother. You know, you were programmed from life to do what your parents told you to do. You didn't question it. You just did it. And being programmed like that, knowing my parents were not going to change their mind about me going to this school, I had to deal with it. My parents were that way. They would put you in situations where you had to think for yourself and you had to do for yourself, because there was no guarantee that they were going to always be around. So you had to learn, and some things you had to learn on your own. And that was just my parents' way. Put in that situation, they knew what I was going through. But as my mother told me one day, if your ancestors could sit around in a village and everything is going just fine and everybody's happy. Then all of a sudden, you have a collar around your neck, you're put in chains, you're frightened, you don't know what's going on. Never happened to you before. You see all these strange people. You see strange boats. You're even frightened of the boat because you've never seen one that big. And they were taken from their environment, put down in the hold of a ship with other people there, everybody crying, everybody wondering why God has forsaken them. And they're in the boat, they're coming across the ocean, and not knowing where they're going, where they're going to live or die, just enough food to barely keep them alive. You're down in a dark, damp hole, stinking with people's feces and urine and people getting sick, dying. And they had to face all of that and then came to America. Strange land, strange food. They were made victims by white masters. They had to carry children that they did not want to carry, but they carried children. They had to watch their kids so long, the husband, their everything. And if they can endure that, surely you can endure this. You're really, truly not going through anything.
That's quite a lesson.
So she told me that. And my answer then, and you know, you didn't try to be smart aleck or make comments back to your parents, you know, when they were telling you something. And I said, well, Mom, then let them go. Let them go to school. I was desperate. I just did not want to go. I don't think anyone at that time, any grown-up at that time, could understand that I had a dream. I had dreamt that dream for so long, and I thought it was just automatic that I was going to fulfill that dream by going to the school, Lincoln. And that was the hardest thing for me to deal with, is to accept the fact that I was not going to ever go. The only way that I was ever going to go to Lincoln is by attending some type of event that was held by the other kids. I was just not going to be a direct part of that environment.
Did you know the teachers at Lincoln?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, see, some of these teachers live right in your neighborhood, and plus my older siblings talked about them all the time. And they were active in the community also. They went to your churches, and they were just everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's why I say you had security, because you had everything you needed right in your community. And the only time that you went outside of your community is when you really had to, is if you went to the grocery store. If you went, you know, for some type of socializing, like Moorhead Planetarium or... you know, roses or belts. That was outside of your environment, but you didn't mind because you knew you was going back to yours. And it took me a long, long time to understand why my parents and many other people back in the day was able to suffer in silence when they left the black community and they went out on their jobs and whatever prejudice they met every day, grocery stores or wherever. They could deal with that because as soon as they left that environment, they knew they was going somewhere where they did not have to deal with that. They were going home. And that's what the black community was. It was home, real home to you. Like Dorothy wanting to get back to Kansas. That's what the black community was. You had to get back at any cost. Cost, you know. Yeah. So.
Let's go back to where we were before I interrupted you. Mm-hmm. And you said that when the new Chapel Hill High School was integrated, the black males who went there were angry.
All of them were angry. Most of the kids who came from Lincoln were angry because they closed the school. You know, you took away a part of their life, a life that they have had so many years, and they expected for Lincoln to always be there. You know, this Lincoln was your stepping stone to introduce you to life, real life. And when you graduated from Lincoln, you was ready to face the society that you had to live in. You was ready. But many blacks who went to Lincoln, especially the males, they either went to the military or they got a job or they went on to college. I mean, this was almost like mandatory that you do something, because it was drilled in your head from here to Northside, you have to get an education. If you don't get an education, favorite line the teachers had, you're going to be digging ditches. And back then, anybody could dig ditches. And what they meant by that, grave digger. That's all you're going to be doing is digging somebody's grave. You go out and you dig up the dirt and they drop a body. It don't take education or anything to do that. And so they always told you that. You have to do your schoolwork. You don't want to dig ditches. Anyone can do that.
Do you have any idea of the percentage of students who graduated Lincoln High School?
Well, I don't have to give you a percentage. I can show you. Because we have, I believe just about every student who went to Lincoln, I think majority of that class that was graduating, I think majority of the students graduated. So you have to remember back in the 50s and 60s and all, we had what you call truant officers. And what they did, they made sure that you was in school. They rode around, and if they caught you out of school, they took you to school, and they also told your parents. You had to go to school, and if a child didn't go to school, they had a school for you to go. And that was a training school. Now, this is not Orange County training school I'm talking about. This is a school for ruling students, students who have been sent to school, did not go to school, you were caught playing hooky or whatever, and your parents had to go down and pick you up. This was a county thing. You had to go to school. But because you had to go to school, it was expected for you to do the schoolwork and also to graduate. Because you had to go, it was almost like against the law for you not to go. And I mean, they really enforced that. See, they don't do those type of things now. They don't try to enforce them, but they enforced them back then. You win.
Do you have any idea of the percentage of graduates who went on to get more education, went on to college?
Well, I don't have the percentage, but let's see. Mrs. R.D. Smith might know that. If not, then we can get it from the Chapel Hill Carver City Schools Administrative Office. And you'll be surprised at how many blacks did go on to graduate and also who went on to college. I mean, it was a big number.
So here they were raised in Chapel Hill or Carrboro, and they went to Lincoln, and then a lot of them went to college. Could they come back to the community and get work here?
Well, many did. Well, I wouldn't say many did. Some did come back, and they got jobs. Well, they went on to black universities, and then they came back, and they got some employment. But it was not a whole lot of employment here at the time as far as someone with a degree, a black person with a degree. You were competing with other whites, you know, for the little jobs that we had here. And someone with a degree, of course, you didn't want to go work in housekeeping. So you had to look beyond Chapel Hill in order to, you know, to advance, you know, well, to have some type of career. And so we do have many of our graduates from Lincoln who went on to school. They did move to other areas. But it was almost like you were guaranteed to have a job or go to the military or go on to college. You had a choice. Yes. I mean, you could do either one, but you had to do something. I mean, you could not finish school and then just sit and do nothing. You had to work. You had to do something. And it didn't matter what type of job it was. You had to be productive, because there was a sense in the black community, especially with the families who had low incomes, the parents felt it was their duty to get you out of high school And as you were going, going along in those years, you know, going to school and making your way to the 12th grade, once you got to 12th grade and you finished, it was up to you what you were going to do with your future. You could go to military, you could go to work, or you can go on to black college. And if your parents didn't have the money for you to go, then you worked your way through school. But you had choices, but you made them because this is your life now. We've done our part. And so it's up to you now what you're going to do with your life.
Let's go back to the New Chapel Hill High School and the anger that the black students felt at not being able to complete their education at Lincoln High School, this school that everybody looked forward to mm-hmm. attending, and where the teachers lived in the same neighborhood and seemed to really be your mentors, your friends. How did they handle this at the school, at the new school?
With a fine-tooth comb, because you had a lot of angry students coming from one school and they were angry. And so the things that I had tolerated from the white students, the things they did to me and to some others, the black students were not going to take it. They were too angry. They did not want to be in your school, well, in that school. They were not going to put up with anything that you had to offer, because they already heard these little things that you had been doing to the other students prior to, you know, Lincoln closing down. They were not going to tolerate any of it, and many of them came in with that attitude, you know, I'm ready when you're ready. And so there were arguments, there were fights, but the school was able to maintain, was able to maintain some semblance of peace. And many parents, white parents, did not want their kids involved in it. And so they took their kids out of school and put them in other schools. Oh, absolutely. The well-to-do kids, their parents just put them in, you know, boarding school or send them to private schools, mostly private schools. They could afford the money. So what they were really doing is shielding their kids away from all of this stuff that they knew was coming. Because they knew it was going to be a very rocky transition, trying to put two schools together where all their lives they have been separated. And they have lived separate all of their lives. And now it's like you're putting them together. And I don't think that all the powers that be who were involved in that decision to close one school and then send everyone to just one school, they didn't talk to the students. They didn't ask the students what they thought. Back then, it didn't matter what we thought, because remember the rule, you do as you're told. And so when that happened, it was trying times. It was a lot of tears from some students from Lincoln, because, and I saw myself in them, because their dream, especially at senior class, was to graduate from Lincoln. Also, many of the athletes, they wanted to finish their athletic career in high school under one coach, and that was Coach Pearman. And they wanted that. And he was no longer going to be their coach. He was going to be assistant coach. Someone else was going to be calling the shots. And what that person said goes. It doesn't matter what Coach Pearman might think is best or his opinion, the opinion that counted the most was the person who was the coach. And that was the white coach. And so you had people who, I wouldn't call it depressed, because we didn't even know what depressed was, and being depressed back then was, you know, we just called it being unhappy. And so I watched a lot of sad faces. I watched a lot of tears, and but just like me, I don't know if it's in our genes or whatever, but it just seems that blacks, when they have to, they can't adapt. And I think sometimes it comes from you not having a choice. And so you don't keep things just lingering and lingering and lingering and grieving and grieving. You just learn to put it beyond you so that you can go forward, move forward. And that's what the kids were able to do. Not saying that anger was not there, you know, just about every day, because it was. But these kids just did not tolerate anything from anyone. And so it was a sad time, but for them it was a sad time. But for me, it was a happy time. Because here comes part of my family. This is the family that was in my community that I had to miss for what, 6-7 hours in school. And I got to be with this family after school. But now I had my family in school with me. But I have gotten so used to this other family. I guess I can't exactly call it a family because I never felt a part of the family or a member of the family, but it was something, I guess, that was a part of me that I had to live with. So anyway, when they came, I was ecstatic. I mean, where I might have felt tense all those years by being in the classroom, having white teachers, and, you know, I did have more blacks in my classroom as I went along through the years, but now I was guaranteed to have many, many blacks. So what I did, I chose the classes that I knew was going to have the most majority of blacks in it, so I could be myself. After all those years of having to be someone else or feel like I had to be someone else, finally, I could be myself. And that's what I did. So it didn't matter what class it was, even if it, you know, even if I bypassed the classes that would help you get in good universities or whatever, it didn't matter. All I wanted was to be with my family and to finish school with my family. But I can tell you, when I graduated from Chapel Hill Senior High School, I was glad to get out. And I never ever wanted another part of a school environment like that ever again, because I felt I was cheated. So, but it did make it better for me and many others who started, you know, started out from day one.
What happened if there was a verbal abuse from?
Well, tell you the truth, a lot of the white kids who used to do all that kind of stuff, they kept their lips zipped because they knew it was going to be retaliation. They were not used to that. They were used to someone just walking on, not even telling the principal or whatever, because who's going to do anything about it? And so they just knew from instinct, especially those who are low-income whites, because, you know, you had a lot of verbal abuse coming from them, you know, and they may say something, and then they expect everyone in the class to laugh at it, you know, other whites to join in, even if there were some whites who did not want to. It was perception if you did not join in or smile or giggle or whatever when something was said, then you were taking sides. And they would call you nigger lover. They will label you that. And so you see, not all whites were into this or bought into this, you know, prejudice stuff. A lot of those people who were like that, now they did come from well-to-do families. And they had housekeepers who were black and babysitters who were black. So they were used to being around probably black people all the time because they were in their homes. They depended on them to clean up, to cook, to do whatever, tend to the sick, whatever. And so
those were the ones who were less likely to be.
Right, but it made it uncomfortable for them to join in on some things that was going on because they had someone who was in their own household who they really truly loved as a person, not as a black person, but as a person. And they saw him as a person, and they didn't see him any other way. And so it was almost like, you know, being offensive towards or joining into something that you know is wrong, joining in with it, that gave you, that made them feel just like these other people who did it. And these other people, they did it for a reason. Sometimes I think, you know, words were said or action taken out of fear. I think there were actually some kids who feared us being there. And you can see that in sometimes with our teachers. There were some teachers who were very young. I noticed the young teachers, they were afraid.
They were?
Right. They were afraid because these things was happening right in the classroom, and the teacher is supposed to have control of the classroom. Now, some of the younger teachers, they didn't condone what was going on, but they couldn't show it. Because then the teachers would be targets. They would become targets because they might have stepped in to interfere when they know that someone was being mistreated. Now, it's easy to step in and interfere when it's two people of the same race. But when it's two people and they're of opposite race, then that's going to put that teacher in a position to choose sides, which the teacher would not have actually been choosing sides, but to other students, it may have seemed that way. So you had some who, I could just look at them and tell that, you know, they did not want a specific incident to happen. They wanted it to stop, but they just didn't know how to come in and get it stopped without it causing a backlash to them. The older teachers, now that didn't happen a whole lot with the older teachers because the older teachers demanded respect. It didn't matter what your race was, but they demanded respect. And when they saw something going on, you know, even though it was wrong, they may give them a look at the white student that's doing it. Wouldn't say anything, but would give them a look, and they would cease. And so the way the kids got around that is they waited until after class. They knew the teachers that they could go, well, they knew the classes they could go to and do things and probably get away with it. And they also knew the classes where they couldn't because the teachers would take them to the office and tell the principal, this is not going to happen in my class. These kids are here to learn, and they're going to learn, all of them. So if you can't behave in my class, you're going to the principal's office or you're going outside. But it was not because the student might have been doing something towards a black student. This was because you have to have respect in the classroom. And the teacher demanded that. And there was no place in her classroom for picking on someone else, even someone of your own race. You know, some classes, they just didn't allow it. When you came in, you was ready to do some work. And the teacher was serious about it, and that's all you did. So like I said, if you were in a class like that, you just waited until after class, and then you did something. And you didn't do it in the doorway, because there were some teachers who actually stood at the doorway and watch the kids go out. Because sometimes, you know, I was tripped on the way going out the door. But these teachers would stand there and just waiting on something to happen. And I would call that kid out. And so, you know, they just got around it. You know, so, but I guess, in a sense, this is where God wanted me to go in the seventh grade to get the lesson that helped me throughout my life, because he had something else for me to do when I got to the university. So he prepared me, you know, for that struggle, because I had, from the seventh grade on, I had mingled with whites, and I knew some of their attitudes, and I knew why they reacted to some issues, why they reacted that way. And so by the time I got to University Police, I met some of the people who I met along my way back in the 50s and 60s, who, but that's what police were made out of back then. Well, anyway, they were very prejudiced people, but they were at a university and working in a police department. Now, I had expected them to be on a police department in the city, well, in the town, but not at a university where there's higher education. Because, you see, I was fooled. When my family moved from Carlboro, and we moved over to the Northside area, as you're going up Church Street, when you leave out of here, take your right turn, going up Church Street, when you get up to the intersection of MacDay Street and Church Street, you look over to your left side. The left side of this street, all whites lived on the left side of this street, and the blacks lived on the right side. And that was first time that I had ever lived that close to whites. But the whites and the blacks in the community, they got along. I didn't have any racial problems whatsoever. No, I never felt prejudice, none of that. When I came this way, it's an old saying, when you cross the railroad track, you're in trouble. It doesn't matter whether you're going to Carlboro, going past Kentucky Fried Chicken, or you're going down off Cameron Avenue and crossing over at Mill Road. So anyway, by me living that close, having that close contact with whites in school, and then living in a community where whites were right next door, that was a learning experience, because it taught me no matter what the kids might be doing in my school, they didn't live on the other side of the street by me. And these were professors, these were, you know, people who had a little bit. This was just like another environment. And so I was constantly learning things about the white race and about people, about them and their attitudes. And so it was a great lesson, because it told me something about economic status, how that played into how you were going to view the world. Now, if you were down here on the lower end, you might have viewed the world a little bit different. If you're on the upper end, you viewed it differently, because you were really, you didn't have to have a lot of contact with either one of these two here, the blacks. You didn't have to have it with low-income whites, not unless you wanted to, because your economic status, you know, kept you away from a lot of things that was going on. But many of the people in a community like that, they are the ones who would give to the black community. Many times I would walk in that same community, and especially during Halloween, that these people would actually leave the doors open. And we just walk right in and get our candy. Sometimes they have pennies and things on the table. Some homes we go to, they would have writing paper. They knew we needed notebook paper for school. They even had pencils. And that was for us when we came by. So you see, it was totally different going to school and then where I actually lived.
That's fascinating.
It's fascinating because, you see, if my mother had not taught us not to be prejudiced, do not dislike a person because of the color of their skin. Not everyone in that skin is an enemy to you. But if you close your mind, you will never know which one could be your friend. And so you see, and I consider those people who lived on the left side of the street, all up in that little area there, they were my friends. Summertime, we could go and we walked to have pear trees, all kind of fruit trees and things in the yard, and they knew we were coming. And they just let us have it. You know, take bags and just pick up as much as we wanted. Sometimes they might even have little babysitting jobs, you know, let us do that, or rake the leaves or something. But it was in harmony. Not once did someone stick a dog on us. Not once did, you know, people holler something out at the street, you know, as we were walking by. We just felt a part of that neighborhood because in reality, it was still a part of Northside, the Northside community. But they fit in. They fit in the community. And so I didn't have that when I lived in Carver, because, like I said, anytime you went beyond the railroad track, you were going to meet with a little bit of resistance. But I understood, you know, as I went to school and was around people and all, I understood why, you know, that they showed some resistance going that way. Because they didn't have that much more than I had, you know. And surely, by them being white, by right, they had to have something, because they were not of my race. But being white, it gave you some type of privilege, even though you were right down here with me. So I looked at it that way, and I still look at it that way, because I can understand those people a whole lot better than maybe some whites can, because we have sort of like the same background. We had the same morals, principles, and all. But somewhere along the line, there was so much anger way, way back. And there was a threat that blacks were taking away something from these people who live right down here with me. Because a lot of times, whites would much rather hire a black to clean their house and do all this other thing than to get a low-income white. Now, I don't know why that's so, but back then, majority of your housekeepers and people who babysit, who clean houses, and I mean practically raise other people's kids, they were black. And so I'm sure there was a little resentment from that, from people on the low income, whites on the low income, who thought maybe that job should have been theirs.
So are you saying that this economic competition in a way led to some of the prejudice?
Oh, absolutely. But see, I didn't know that as I was growing up as a child. But as I started mingling with whites, I mean really having to have contact with whites outside of my community and having to contact with them every day. Because see, when I was in the black community, I didn't have to have contact at all. Just my parents going to work. But when I was with them every day, I got to see some of it for myself. I got to see how some of them were dressed. And many of the students, white students especially, knew that it was 11 kids in my family. And so I may come in with a dress, nice dresses, starched and all that. And some of the kids may wonder, well, where did she get that dress? Or how could they afford that dress? Well, people gave us clothes. And my mother worked for people cleaning up, doing all of this. And, you know, when they no longer wanted clothes or whatever, they just passed them on. You know, and so we got clothes. But my mother always saw to it that it had plenty of starch in it. You know, the clothes would stick out like that, you know. But you always had starch in your clothes back then, shirts, everything. And so she tried to send us to school. You may not have had on the best clothes in the world, but it was clean, it was pressed. And some of the kids I saw that came out of a Carver area, it's just like the parents just threw the clothes on them and that was it. But my mother always said that your children is a reflection of you. And how you feel about yourself, it goes right back to your children. So if you have a good impression of yourself and how you want to look, then your children would look the same. And so, but that's how it was in the black community. Now on the weekend, now you just might be looking terrible, but you were at home. But whenever you went somewhere, I mean, you had to look decent. It didn't matter if you even had a hole in your pants or whatever. If the rest of it was ironed and clean and neat, that's fine, you know. And so it was just some things that you did in the black community that everyone in the black community did. You know, it's just how you sent your kids out. You never sent them out looking ragged or anything like that. They were always clean, especially going to school. And I have to admit, we had two pairs of shoes, one for Sunday and one for school. You never got caught in your Sunday shoes, not unless it was on Sunday, because I did that and I got a spanking. So, you know, you had a time for everything and a place for everything, and so.
How are you fixed for time? It's about.
Well, what about, let's see, I got about 5 to 2. Is that what you have?
Yeah. Do you want to quit
well,
now?
Well, we can go 5 more minutes if you want.
All right. I wanted to revisit Chapel Hill High School, the new Chapel Hill High,
yes,
and ask you what traditions from Lincoln High School came to the new high school.
The only thing I saw was the name Fighting Tigers.
Was
and,
that there when you got there, or was
oh,
that
no,
changed
no.
later?
I forgot what. I think we were called the Wildcats.
So.
And then when Lincoln, when the schools were combined, we had the name of Tigers, and I believe we had the school colors, black and gold.
When you started Chapel Hill High?
No, when I started Chapel Hill High,
I mean the new Chapel Hill High.
Oh, the new Chapel Hill High. See, it was a year in there before the school was actually integrated. See, let me see. I was in, let's see, I'm trying to think now when it was actually, because I repeated the 11th grade. That is correct. When they came over, those colors and things came with them. That's the only concession that was made, that you can have the colors and you can have the Tiger's name. And that's about all that was brought over. I didn't see the trophies from Lincoln School, you know, the athletes, you know, football, basketball, and all these other things that were, the school was in. I didn't see any of that.
And that was important to you?
It was a legacy. You know, if you're going to combine the schools, why are you going to have the